This is what we call the Miguel Show Uncensored that you can find at hot1015tampabay.com, on the Hot 101.5 app, and now on iTunes.
Yeah, we're big time.
Yeah, so if you are like, oh my gosh, I want to take it with me everywhere, which you can, but you can also listen on iTunes. My name is Miguel Fuller.
I'm Holly O'Connor.
I'm producer Jared!
Poor Jared.
So right now we're in a different studio than normal. Normally we're broadcasting from our sister station, The Dove.
Oh, The Dove.
Right now we are broadcasting from 107.3, The Eagle Classic Hits.
Yeah.
Where you have names such as, what were we saying, Roxy Hart.
Roxy Stone. And Brandy Fox.
Because, Holly, you had a radio name when you started in country radio. What was it?
Holly McKenzie
on, what was it, WCKY?
103.7 WCKY. And Buckeye Country. That's what it started as.
Oh, Buckeye Country.
Yeah.
Did you say it like that?
I'm sure I started off Buckeye Country, 103.7 WCKY. And then they told me to start smoking menthols. And I said, WCKY. So I didn't smoke menthols, by the way.
No, when I started, I was in Savannah, and I went by Spanish Michael.
Well.
And it was 97.3 Kiss FM.
I don't know. I think it's when radio people first start their first like on-air radio jobs, they get so excited that they want to talk way up here and be shouting and yelling all the time. Because it just seems like that's what you do.
I'm trying to think. What were the bands when I started? I remember that's when it was like really pop music was like really band heavy with like The Fray. I'm trying to think. There was another band in particular that they Hinder.
Oh,
they had
was that,
like,
was that 07?
Yes, that
for
was
you?
07, 08.
Okay, because I was going to say Hinder is definitely 07.
Yeah, that was when, and especially that radio in Savannah, like hip hop hadn't really didn't do well on the pop station. And so it was all about the rock songs. And so it was like, hey, I'm Spanish Michael. Here's the new one from Hinder on Savannah's 97.3 Kiss FM.
Oh my gosh, that's rough.
Anyway, so this is the Miguel Show Uncensored. And what we've been doing is called the prologues, where they're basically the origin stories of all of us on the show. So we started with mine, which you can find at hot1015tampabay.com. Click on the Miguel Show Uncensored. And we just did producer Jared's last week. Well, we had to scramble in here to do Holly's because you're going to be gone all next week to your best friend from college's wedding.
That's right. I'm flying up to Ohio for the wedding, and I'll be there the whole week, too. I figured this was a good time to take some time because I knew I had to go to Ohio for the wedding. So I was like, well, I mean, all my family is there and my friends that I haven't seen in a long time. So I'm taking my daughter, I'm taking my mom, and we're going to see all the family and friends. That's why I took the whole week off.
So you're going to be gone. And producer Jared and I are holding down the fort for 2 days with Phoebe, who does middays on Hot, and she'll be filling in for Holly. And by the way, I think we started, I didn't finish the thought, but we're in the Eagle and there's only two microphones in here. And so
Jared, I told Jared he could come sit real close and we could share the mic, but he's going to go sit close to Miguel and share his mic.
But not even really that close.
No, they're pretty far.
Jared, do you think I'm going to touch you?
I mean, you can, but it's a reach.
That's a real reach. Why am I yelling?
Reach. Why are you yelling?
It's a literal reach around.
But so we got this idea of what we're calling the prologues, our origin stories, because of a podcast that some guys here at the station do, Holly.
Yeah. You're like, here's our due diligence.
Well, I talked to Dennis, and he was like, thanks for shouting us out. Thanks for shouting a podcast out. So I figured we'd do it again.
Yeah, it's The Crowded Table, and I want to make sure I got it right this time. It's The Crowded Table, and it is Dennis and John Senning and I want to call him Kyle, and his name's not Kyle.
No, that's Jake. Our new promotion.
Jake! Why
Jake?
Did I not?
Yes!
Jake. Poor Jake! You know what? I don't know Jake as well as I know John and Dennis, and I feel like if Jake and I could just have like a lunch or something, I would remember better.
Isn't Jake married?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Isn't he?
Yeah, Jake is married. We don't see him that often around.
He has long hair, right?
No.
Wait, I don't think I know who Jake
is. See? Wait, Jake is like he's the mystery guy that you never see. You don't see him that often. You see John Setting all the time. It's promo John.
Yeah.
You see Dennis all the time. He's here every day, but you never see Jake, which is why I apparently wanted to call him Kyle.
Wait, so
you're thinking of like the Yeti looking guy.
The Yeti looking. Oh, is he like in his 30s?
Yeah.
Got it. I know who he is.
Okay.
I don't know what his name is, but I got it. So anyway, we got this idea from them to do our backstory. So Holly, Who are you?
Oh, here we go.
How did you get to where you are today?
Okay. I just wrote down some bullet points about my life to try to sum this up quickly. I don't know. Like, you guys started with when you were a kid. Now I'm trying to remember. So where do you want me to start?
I mean, here's how I look at it. What events in your life shaped you? So not, you know, I skinned my knee, you know, but okay. Like your parents got divorced, your right. mom had cancer.
Yeah.
Those are things that I know about your story, but there may be other things that I don't know that shaped you into who Holly O'Connor is today.
Got it. Okay, so let's start off with I was an only child until I was 8. Mm. So when you talk about someone who has like only child syndrome, I probably was on the way to having that, you know, having been just the one and only. But my mom was thrilled when I was born, which Why is a was really she, awesome I mean, feeling.
All parents are thrilled. No, but
she was like more than normal parents, I think.
Why?
Because she had had 2 miscarriages before me.
Oh.
And she wanted so desperately to be a mom that when, you know, she had the first miscarriage and then she had the second miscarriage and she had basically almost given up hope that she would ever have a kid. And so then when she got pregnant with me and like they did everything they could and, you know, thankfully it worked out and I was born, she was so overjoyed to become a parent. I was like the golden child, basically.
Wow. So you could do no wrong.
Pretty much. But I would, like, I say that with a caveat to say, but I was also a good kid. I know that's coming from me, so you're like, well, of course you're going to say you're a good kid. Mm. But I really was. I didn't get into trouble much. So, I mean, it was a perfect little balance for her. And she, like, she says that her best times were in her 30s. And, of course, when my brother came along, she also was thrilled for him, too.
Mm-hmm.
But to have that feeling of a parent who has so desperately longed to have a child, and then that child to, like, be showered with that love, it's pretty amazing. So, like, I had a great childhood with my mom. So that was how it started. And then when my brother was born, when I was 8, it like changed directions because now you've got another sibling and I adapted to that pretty well.
Were you bitter at first of what you can remember?
No, the only thing I wanted to make sure was that he was not born on my birthday, and it was almost a close call.
Oh.
Because I was like, I will not share a birthday with him. I always have felt, and this is really selfish of me, but I have always felt like, this is really selfish sounding. I don't even know if I want to share it.
No, you have to. This is who makes
I
up
sort
you.
Of feel like.
Oh dear, here we go.
Because my birthday is on New Year's Day, I'm destined for great things. I know that sounds dumb. Like, what day is not better than any other day? Mm-hmm. But I just really, I know it's corny, but I love the idea that I was born on the first day of that year. Like, it just felt like a fresh beginning and like a cool birthday to have. And I feel like it's special to me. So if it's set my life course on, it's right there. So my birthday is January 1st, in case you're
interesting. So a quick question. Do you think that because you say, you know, you adjusted to or you would have been selfish if you had been an only child because your parents showered you with all this love?
I think I would have been a little more spoiled and a little more selfish.
Do you think that you still have a little bit of that runs through you?
I think so.
That you never got out of because you were showered with so much love and praise?
Probably. I think probably because you don't, I mean, you can't really get rid of that. You
how
know?
So? Like, how do you think that's affected your life?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know because I'm the one that's living it, but I will say that I think I had a very extended selfish phase of like just wanting to do what I wanted to do in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I was aware of it, though, because I'm always aware of what's happening. Mm-hmm. I just don't always like make corrections to fix it. But I don't know how to explain it. I don't know. Because I knew I didn't want to get married right away. I knew I didn't want to have kids early on because I wanted to just do what I wanted to do. Maybe that is what makes me selfish.
Do you think that you waited or that you still got married too soon?
Yeah. And that's the weird thing, too, is that I didn't get married. I was, what was my age? I was 28, I think, when we got married. And that's pretty, that's normal. Not just normal, but for some people, late in the game.
Right.
So you're like, okay, well, that's obviously a pretty mature age to be married. But I also feel like I maybe am on a later life path. One time, one of my exes called me immature. I feel like I'm going, I'm like you guys, I'm all out of order here.
No, it's not. Listen, it could be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be a chronological order of your life.
Yeah. Well, one of my exes, after we broke up and got back together and then broke up again, like later, way later, we had a lunch or a dinner together and we ended up talking about, you know, our qualities. And he said that he thought I was very immature. And this, I think I was about 25 when he said that, 24. And I was pissed. because I am a very mature person in that I'm very responsible. Mm-hmm. I'm a hard worker and I get my shit done. And I also, having been 8 years older than my little brother, I sort of helped raise him because my mom had cancer, because she went through a divorce at the same time. I felt really in charge of my brother. So I sort of feel like a mom sister to him in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this ex to then call me immature, it felt like a slap in the face because I was like, do you know me at all? I am the literal opposite of immature. I am the most mature person because I've always been more comfortable at the grown-ups table than the kids table, like
right.
Just stuff like that. But then as I have gotten older, I'm almost 10 years removed from that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it hits me and I'm like, you know, I think he actually was right, but not in the way that I thought he meant it.
Do you think that still applies to you now?
Yes. Yeah.
How
I'm
so?
Immature in a weird way, because in so many ways I'm not only mature, but super mature for both my age and just for life in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in some other aspect of my life, I'm very immature when it comes to, probably when it comes to maybe being like an attention seeker or a praise seeker. In those ways, I think I might be emotionally or mentally immature.
But so
these are just thoughts that I've had along the way, and I haven't developed them, so I can't really give you like a full psychological analysis because I haven't really delved that deeply.
Do you think because of that you crave attention from places you shouldn't?
Probably so, because I do. That's like one of my dark, bad sides. Like, because I have, everybody's got the light and the dark, if you will.
Right.
So that's probably one of my bad sides, is that I'm sometimes an attention whore. And nobody likes to admit that. But I mean, we're in radio, so.
You gotta have some sort of ego.
We all are a little bit.
Right.
Me, especially so. Like, yeah, I like to be the center of attention, making people laugh. That's just part of who I am. It's a weird thing because I'm also sort of introverted, because if I don't know you and I don't know what you think about me, I'm going to hold back until I know, until I can get a gauge on you, because I'm sort of psychic when it comes to reading people.
How so?
I can feel their energy. I can feel what they are feeling, thinking. Like, I don't know their precise thoughts. I'm not psychic in that way, but I know how usually I'm pretty correct about what people are feeling or why, or like towards me. Like, I can pick up the energy in a room. Like, if there's the mood is down, I can tell who's bringing the mood down, and I maybe don't know why, but I can, like, if I know them, I can guess a general direction, or if I care enough to know, I'll know.
What's producer Jared's mood right now?
Well, first of all, Jared's pissed that there's no third mic, and I don't think that's a big secret. But, I mean, I think that Jared's just interested to hear the story right now. Jared has a lot of other stuff going on in his personal life right now, but I know that I wish Jared did have a mic, too.
Jared, come say something.
Hi.
Okay.
I'm not mad I don't have a mic. I'm just tired.
That's generally Jared's mood, is tired.
Always tired.
Yeah.
Holly, I want to talk to you because I don't know a whole lot about this part of your life, and I feel like I'm just going to pretty much direct where this is going.
Go ahead. Like I said, I have a list, and I can read down the list later, and we can chuckle at it. But
there are parts of your life, since I know you so well, that I don't know.
I feel like if this was The Lion King, you would be Mufasa. You'd be like, everywhere that the light touches, I know, but that dark place, I don't know that.
I don't know that.
Okay.
So your parents got divorced when you were how old?
10.
And I feel like most people that I've met in my life, that when they talk about their parents' divorce, it is a very painful, it's sort of like you know how you look at life as like sort of like before this happened and then after that happened?
Yeah.
And that's how normally I feel like divorce is looked at for kids when they're that age where you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever hear you talk about it like that. It's just sort of like my mom had cancer, my parents got divorced, I went to high school, I was a geek, I was in band. It's sort of just like a list. You don't ever talk about how it truly affected you.
Mm.
Did it at all?
Yeah, obviously it did. But I guess, again, I think this goes back to me being a little bit more emotionally mature in that area, because I can, again, read people. And that goes back to a young age, because leading up to the divorce, they were fighting a lot. And I could see that as a kid. Like, kids see stuff. And there was one night in particular, I remember, we had gotten pizza. And I don't know why we ate. Oh, probably because shit was bad at home, but we ate a lot of pizza. And so we were eating pizza, and my dad wasn't home, and I'm sure my mom was wondering where the hell he was. And finally he got home, and I remember it being late, and so she said, "You just keep eating your pizza, watch your brother. I need to go talk to your dad in the garage." And I was like, "Well, this is different.
Oh,
we don't talk in the garage ever."
No.
So they went to the garage, and I start hearing louder voices. So what I did, because I'm nosy.
And you were how old?
10.
10 years old.
Yeah. And I took my brother, and who was 2 or a little younger than 2. Mm-hmm. And I may have been a little younger than 10. So I took him. I don't know. I felt like I was very dramatic. So I was like, I need to protect him.
Why do I feel like this is a Lifetime movie right now? And like, you literally have your hands cupped over your little brother's ears, and you're like, in your mind, I've got to protect Patrick.
I did. I was very dramatic in those days. So also now. But anyway, so I took him upstairs to my bedroom, and the walls were painted pink, and the register, because we lived in the north, so the register is in the bottom of the heat comes out.
Mm.
So I put him on the floor, and he's playing with something. I gave him like a slice of pizza up there, and I had pressed my ear to the register so I could hear, because you could hear their voices through the register. And my mom was saying something about why wasn't he home, and who was that, and he said, "Don't worry about it." And I don't really remember much else of the actual conversation, but I knew that it wasn't good.
So in your 10-year-old brain, when you hear your mother accusing your father of what I'm assuming she was accusing him of, infidelity, did you understand at that time what that meant?
No, I had no idea. Not only I don't think 10-year-olds, maybe they do, but I don't think 10-year-olds can grasp that concept fully.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was super sheltered, so I certainly didn't grasp it fully. But I knew, because I can pick up and feel emotions from people, I knew that it was my mom was upset and my dad was angry, and that's all that I really knew. So like, this kind of stuff went on, and then I don't know how much later it was, but my mom took us again to pizza.
Pizza?
I just really like this pizza place. And we went there, and I remember she sat across the table from me, and we had my brother in the high chair, and she goes, "Your father and I are going to get divorced. Do you know what that means? That means we're not going to be married anymore. We're not going to be together." And I remember, and maybe I was younger than 10. I could have been 9. And I just went, "I know. I think that's a good thing." Like, trying to counsel my mom at the age of 10.
Like, what?
I told you, because I'm in
like, poor Margaret sitting there like, this little bitch trying to tell me something.
She probably
who the hell do you think you are?
It's like, "Mom, it's okay. I think it's for the best."
Oh my God. I wish. Do you remember what she said after
that? No, I have no
idea. God, I really wish
she was
probably
so inside herself and so full of like hurt and anger about my dad. So I just wanted to be there for my mom, because I loved my mom, and I don't want her to be hurting. So I didn't quite understand, but I knew that whatever that meant, it meant that maybe they wouldn't fight anymore. And it didn't really hit home. And this is where I think I've told the story on the air, but like, it didn't really hit home for me until I walked into the bathroom one morning to go like wash up and brush my teeth, and my dad's toothbrush wasn't there anymore. And I was like, that's... where is it? And like, that toothbrush for some reason hit home, where I was like, life is different because this is missing. And it's like, it would be as though you woke up one morning and your kitchen's not there. You're like, this is new.
What the hell?
Like, that little toothbrush was so symbolic, because it was like, your life is about to be not bad, but just different.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that crazy, though, for me as a divorced kid, because some kids get shuttled between like houses. That was never the case for me. Like, we never went and visited my dad never lived in a place where he could have kids over. Like, he had a very small apartment, I think, so he always came over to visit us, or he always would take us to dinner or something.
So you never saw where your dad was living?
No, I never did, now that I think about it. And it was weird, like, we saw him, but we didn't see him as often, I guess. But he worked a lot when I was young too, so it wasn't that weird to me. Like, I don't have any hurt feelings at all about it. I just wanted to make sure my mom was okay. Like, I was just concerned for her.
Have you talked about it with your dad since?
No, I don't talk about any of that with my dad.
No.
No, no.
Why do you say it like that?
We don't have that type of relationship where we talk about feelings and deep stuff.
What do you talk about?
He's not a talker.
What do you talk about with him?
I just kind of ramble on about life, and he goes, okay, Peanut. Like, he's really nice, and he cares about it, like, as much as he can. He's such an odd character, though, my dad. Like, I know that he cares, but he's just so hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say. Like, sometimes, every now and then to this day, I get a little frustrated and upset with my dad. And I was like, if I was a different person, this would probably hurt me deeply. Like, the other day on Facebook, I saw him share a thing on my brother's Facebook. He didn't share anything on my Facebook. Mm. Like, I don't ever, the only thing I get from him is he likes my stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't ever reach out to me. He doesn't ever share stuff on my Facebook. But I know that he loves me. And like I said, if it was another person, they'd be like, well, why isn't my dad reaching out to me?
Right.
I don't care. Like, do you? I know that you love me, and I know that I'm okay, and that's just who you are as a person. I'm not hurt by it.
Do you see a theme like that with your life with people?
What theme?
Where basically if you... Hold on, let me think about how I want to phrase this question. Hold on. Like with your dad. So you sort of assume what he's thinking. And so I don't want to use the word write him off, but you're sort of like, well, I'll put you in that category of I don't need to basically have this emotional depth with you.
Maybe.
Is this making sense?
Okay, yeah, I see where you're going.
So I'm saying, do you have this pattern with other people?
Where I write them off once I see that they're not going to give me what I need.
And I don't want to say the term write it
off. Right, but for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Because I don't. And I mean, I call my dad. I do talk to my dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, when I was going through my divorce, I had to call. That was a hard call. It was, because we don't talk that often. So like, to get a call out of the blue, like, you know, it's been 6 months or 8 months.
You've been
bebopping
along.
Hey, Dad, how you doing? Hey, by the way. Yeah, I'm getting divorced. Like, that was rough. Mm. But he was very understanding about it. But anyway, maybe, now that you mention it, maybe. Because, and that maybe it is a self-preservation thing that I do,
mm-hmm.
or a defense mechanism, excuse me, where it's like, if you show to me through actions that I can't count on you or that you're going to let me down, I'll pull the depth away from you so that you can't do it anymore.
Okay.
Maybe that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, that thought occurred to me as you were talking about your dad.
I love having... See, this is why I love you so much, because we have such great... We get to a good area. You're like a therapist for me. Gosh.
I'm just like, let's think about that.
That's true. And I guess that's interesting, because I never thought about that. Like, the divorce, I was okay with it. I'm okay mm-hmm. with my dad. He exists and I love him. You know, I want mm-hmm. him to be well, but I'm not like, he doesn't hurt me.
What's the biggest takeaway that you tried to apply to your relationships from your parents' failed marriage?
You know what it is? I think that I did it wrong, actually.
Really?
Because I think originally what my takeaway was is that my mom is very vocal when she's upset.
Mm-hmm.
So like, my view of my parents fighting is like my mom doing a lot of nagging and a lot of yelling.
Right.
And I was like, ugh. And so in a kid's brain, maybe that equates to, okay, well, if the woman is doing a lot of yelling and nagging, the dude's gonna cheat and then leave,
right.
or vice versa, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my mom does that. My stepdad, I have that whole written down too. I did not like my stepdad, but she did that with him too, and I hated it, and I couldn't stand the arguing all the time. So, like, that's one big reason why I don't like confrontation, because it feels awful inside.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would see that, I guess for me, maybe like my subconscious takeaway was, don't nag,
mm-hmm.
don't yell, and be agreeable to everything, I guess. I don't know. I wish I could remember more of my college relationship, but it was so long ago that I just don't.
It's interesting. It's sort of like your mother, because I consider your mom sort of like an early feminist, because she taught you, you know, don't let a man, you know, you don't need a man for your life. You need to go to work and get an education. But by her being vocal and being a feminist, it sort of had the reverse effect on you. So instead of you being that woman, you were agreeable, and thankfully you're with a guy, which I don't think if you were with someone who were like who was physical with you,
right,
that you would just sit and
No, I wouldn't.
But the fact that you were just kind of like, even when things were kind of tough, you were like, well, I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to nag because that's what you saw your mom doing. You sort of interpreted that as a kid that it was nagging, even though it necessarily wasn't. It was just your mom trying to be like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you out at night or whatever, you know?
Right, right.
So interesting.
It is. It is interesting. But she is definitely a feminist, and she instilled that in me. Like, she said, and I has said many times, like, you got to get your career together and you always be able to support yourself. Mm-hmm. Never depend on anybody to support you. Mm-hmm. And that's been my main driving force through life, is like, I have got to take care of myself.
Mm.
So, and then she always said, like, if you fall in love and or get married, that's a bonus.
So what's the next area of your life that sort of shaped who you are?
Oh, man.
Would it be something from high school? Was it your mother's relationship with your stepfather?
That probably falls into that same what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh, that was awful. I really hated my stepdad.
Why?
Just, he was a bitch. Like, he was so mean. He was mean.
And
he wasn't abusive physically, but he was emotionally just abusive, like, devastatingly.
How so?
He would get into such bad fights with my mom and just get nasty with her, and she would get nasty back. It's not like she just, like, was a doormat or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. You as a kid, you don't want to see your parent go through that. And so I don't know, like, it's hard to explain when you're in the middle of, like, emotional abuse, because it's the little nitpicky everyday things, like,
right,
just such stupid little stuff. Like, one time I left a cup of milk out when I went to bed, and he like got into a rage about it the next time I saw him, because he was like, you can't leave stuff out, like, before you have to go to bed, you have to clean up your stuff because milk and it smells and blah blah blah. And it's just like little stuff. And I can't, like, one time he wanted to, I feel like it's dumb stuff, but it was,
not.
It was like stuff that mattered, you know?
And especially it's the tone. Like, it's one thing to hear you say, well, you left a cup of milk out. But if you remember that situation, it wasn't just, holla, you left a cup of milk out. It was like, you dummy.
Right. It was always the tone.
Yes.
And he was awful to my brother. And that's what I felt even worse about. Cause, like, I have this very protective thing where I was like, don't talk to my brother that way. And so I would try to, like, be a buffer if I could. But he was like, and he'd always, like, walk by Patrick and be like, you're so lazy. Oh, it was awful. Ugh, it makes me want to cry.
Wow, but, like, he told him that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Ugh, it was so bad.
Do you think that affected your brother?
Yes. I think my brother had it a lot worse off than me, because I was a little older by then. But Patrick was like 4 when my mom met, because they like had known each other in the past. So, like, re-met my stepdad and they got married.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick had like an entire growing ups with it, you know? And I feel like that sort of turned him into this vigilante, like, kind of a dick person that he is today. Because he kind of is. Like, we just had a conversation last weekend and he was like, I feel like my reputation in this town is ruined because my ex's friend has said that I treat women bad. I'm like, do you treat women bad? And he's like, well, no. I'm like, she just said I'm a dick. I'm like, are you a dick? And he goes, yeah, I guess so. I'm like, well, quit being a dick. Damn.
How is he dickish?
I don't know. I don't know him that well.
Mm.
It sucks. It really sucks. I really feel bad about that. But, I mean, that's what happens when you're 8 years older.
Right.
I mean, I left when he was 10 to go to college, and I've never been home since.
Mm.
So I didn't grow up with him past the age of 10. So I missed his formative years.
Now, what was your mom doing during that time when your stepfather was being like that towards you or to your brother?
Oh, she would yell at him about it.
Would she?
She was always our defender, always. And she always put us first. So, like, that's was amazing. Like, you had to have her in your corner.
Why do you think she stayed?
I think a lot of reasons. I think she first was, this is not in any kind of order, okay?
No, it's fine.
So, I think she stayed because she was embarrassed she would have been embarrassed to have had a second failed marriage.
Mm.
I think she wanted to try to make it work because, you know, she didn't like the idea of divorce in the first place.
Right.
Then I think eventually it got to the point where it would have been costly and she couldn't have afforded it.
Right.
And it would have been just really painful, even more painful than staying in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got sick and it was just a big mess.
Mm.
Like, there was just a lot of reasons. I think that's why.
Do you think that because he's passed on?
Yeah.
Was she happy or was she sad when he passed?
Both, probably, because she also had to care for him for like a year and a half while he was ill, and he was like in a facility, like a nursing facility. Yeah, hospice care, and that takes a toll on anybody. So, but she says now that she's glad that happened because she's gotten like she was always religious, but she's gotten like super religious in the past 5-10 years. So she's like she felt like that was God giving her like a test of patience and giving her closure to that relationship. Like
interesting.
He needed, she's like, maybe that's why God put that in my life, because he needed someone to take care of him. And I was there and I was able to do it. And then it all really fell into place, just by the way, him getting sick, because they lived in Ohio. Obviously, I lived here in, I lived in Florida. He got sick, passed away in 2012, I think. Maybe 2012. Let's say 2012.
Okay.
I had to fly up, help her settle a lot of different financial affairs. That's was like really intense. And then I got pregnant, or maybe if he passed away in 2011, I got pregnant in 2012. And then my mom was like, I got nothing keeping me here anymore, so I'm gonna come down there with you. Like it just boom, boom, boom. It just sort of fell into place.
It happened the way that it was supposed to.
That's how she feels too. Like she feels like it just happened that way.
What was your biggest takeaway from college that you feel like shaped who you are today?
Oh, that's a good one. I think in college I learned how to have fun.
Were you not a fun haver?
I was a fun haver.
Or were you a fun ruiner in high school?
No, I had a lot of fun, a lot of PG fun in high school. I had a lot of, you know, crazy times in college. And I think somehow I learned how to balance them. But I let loose and I became more of who I think I really am. I think that's what anybody can say of college, though. If you go away, you more so become who you're going to be as an adult. And so I learned who I was and I made friends on my own accord, and I didn't, because I was pretty sheltered, and I didn't have that, like, protective bubble around me, and so I could make mistakes and then learn from them, so I grew up a little bit in college. I think that was the main takeaway.
Did you finally meet a black person in college?
I knew a black person in high school, thank you very much.
Oh, was there just one?
There were a few.
Five?
There was Monique. There was Ebony.
That's racist.
That's what their names were, Jared. There was Gerard. There was Deontay.
Oh, no.
What? These are their names that I graduated with.
Oh, my. Like made-up names.
They're not. Deontay Farrell and his brother Gerard. Deontay and Gerard. And then there was Monique Alexander. There was Ebony. There was, who else did I? Oh, there was Shirkendra.
Okay, the fact that you can remember every single black person's
there was like
name,
10. There was
like
10.
That's ridiculous.
But I remember them though.
So in college, I know just from being one of your best friends forever, is that you had a very important relationship when you were in sort of the first love of your life.
It was. You know what? That's another good takeaway from college. Are we like running really long right now? I feel like we're like on an hour and a half.
No,
we're
at 32.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should wrap it up then.
No, you can keep going.
Well, the big takeaway.
Actually, Shop Top, what time is your remote?
It's at 1. What time is it now? I mean, not at 1. It's at 3. I don't know why I said it's 1. Tomorrow is at 1. I'm sorry.
I was like, it's at 1, girl? No. It's 1:05.
No, tomorrow's is at 1. Today's is at 3.
Okay.
I'm fine.
So your biggest takeaway from college relation?
Is that this sounds...
Don't think about it. Just say it.
In college, I learned that I am a beautiful woman. I never knew that in high school. Like, I thought I was ugly and horrible and, like, not really deserving of love or a relationship or anything. And I was, like, just to be made fun of. And in college, I realized that I'm beautiful.
What taught you that?
That was my first relationship it shouldn't have to be that it's validation from a member of the opposite sex, but a lot of times it is. So it was that this guy, Denny, who was like the hottest guy as far as I knew on campus. Like I thought that, but it wasn't just me. Like other people thought that too. He was really hot. Like in the fraternity that he was in was kind of like known as the dork fraternity, but they were cooler because he was in it. Like, does that make sense? Like other fraternities wanted him because he was just like, just laid back and cool and funny. And like,
he's that guy.
He was the man about campus.
Oh, the man about town.
Yeah, he was that guy. And so when I first met him, and I think he flirted with me, and I was like, I probably melted into a puddle on the floor. Like, I had never had that kind of attention from a peer before, or like a guy that I thought was cute. Mm-hmm. Like, it just had never happened. And I thought, I don't even know. I was like, what is life? What has happened? Who am I? Like, there's birds chirping and there's grass that's green. It was crazy. And so then we went through like a whole like year long thing where he didn't want a girlfriend. I knew he thought I was attractive, but that was really it. And so I wanted to date him, of course, because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're 19, you just want to be in love and stuff.
I want to be with you forever.
Right? I wrote about him in my diary. Of course. Danny. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
I, like, showed him pictures of him to my mom. And like, it was crazy. But then, and we ended up, who I lost my virginity to. And I wouldn't have changed it for the world. Like, I would have changed the place.
Where was it?
Basement of his fraternity.
Yeah, fraternity. Fucking.
Oh, you can say that in the Eagle studio.
Sorry. Oh, you can't. Yeah. No, I don't think you can on the air.
No, we're not on the air. But
no.
So anyway, because he thought that I was good looking, I was like, well, if he thinks I'm good looking, I must be okay.
Now, was this over time that you thought this, or was this literally one time he was like, you're beautiful, and you were like,
my God. It wasn't just him. It was just guys in general in college. Like, I could tell that when they looked at me, they didn't just dismiss me.
And they did that in high school.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's because when you grow up with people and you're like the awkward, dorky, nerdy kid, you're always that kid.
Gotcha.
In high school. Even if maybe my senior year I started to look a little better, they still didn't care because I was still the dork. But so when you go somewhere new and people are like, oh, she's kind of cute. I don't even care if it was like some random ass person that just literally did like a glance in my direction. I'd be like, oh my God, what if he thought I was cute? Like, it was sort of an overload because I had never been thought of as possibly like someone who's pretty.
Now, after you went from being the sheltered girl who really didn't have fun really outside of like band when you were in high school.
We went to movies.
Okay.
We had sleepovers.
Oh, I said we went to the movies.
We did.
We had fun, damn it.
Damn it, we had fun. I swore. We went to the movies.
Like swearing, she said, damn.
She was like, ooh, I said, damn, girl.
Damn.
After you had sex for the first time and you sort of learned about it, do you feel like, did you go crazy after that?
No.
Did you become over-sexualized?
No, I was ashamed, actually, because I was like, I sort of wore the virgin badge with honor, because all the girls that I met when I went to college had already had sex, and they thought it was an anomaly that I hadn't. They were like, you're a virgin? And I was like, yeah, and they thought that was just the like, coolest thing ever. They're like, we know an actual virgin. I'm like, who are you, sluts?
That's crazy for college like that.
I know, it really is, but I was really proud of it, because I knew that I didn't meet anybody in high school that I wanted to like have sex with or feel that way with. And I didn't take it lightly. And so when I did it, I knew that I shouldn't have done it yet, but I knew that I still wanted to do it with him, but I wanted more commitment from him.
But you just you gave it up.
I did, because I was a fucking teenager with hormones. Like, it goes both ways, not just dudes.
Well,
like,
of course.
So then I didn't tell any. You know how we do that thing? Miguel and I will do this thing where we'll do something what we think is a little bit shameful, and we won't tell the other one for a while.
It takes about a week or two.
Yeah.
And then you're like, remember how I lied to you about this one thing? Actually, I had sex on top of the radio station right, with the janitor.
Right. I was the same way in college. I had sex, and it was February 19th.
Oh, wow.
Of 2001 that I first had sex. And I didn't tell anybody until like March or April.
Jeez.
Yeah. Because I was embarrassed. Because I was literally the super V. That's what they called me. That was my title. How do you not?
The super V?
Yeah. I was the super V. You're like a superhero. I was. And then to tell them I gave it up in the basement at Theta Chi?
Oh my God. Why do I feel like when I hear super V, there should be some song about like your hymen and like just.
Right?
That just sounds horrible.
It sounds terrible. But yeah, so I didn't. It wasn't really that. Like, I was embarrassed and ashamed. But then we ended up having sex like twice more, me and him, that year. Then over the summer, I found out he was dating some girl, which I was devastated about. Devastated. Then when we came back in sophomore year, I decided to like start calling him Dennis instead of Denny, because I was like, I'm going to shut it down. I will shut this down. I will not be friends with you. And so when I, the first time I saw him and I called him Dennis, he was like, what's that about? What the hell?
Oh.
And I was like, we are obviously not going to be together. So you are a different person to me. Like, I can't be the same person to you. And I don't think he liked that at all. Mm. So then we did this whole dance of like, we just see each other now and then. He would always like try to like make me laugh or whatever. And then it wasn't until like December of that year that we actually started dating.
Mm.
And we dated throughout pretty much the rest of college.
And then how did your college relationship end?
It ended because I fell out of love with him. So I don't know. I wish that didn't happen. Like, I wish you didn't fall out of love with people. But I also think the reason why I probably fell out of love is because I'm not sure that it was, like, the sort of love that goes the distance. Like, it was love, and I won't discredit that. I know that I loved him, but it wasn't, like, deep soul connected love. And maybe that's what I particularly need in order to make it go the distance. Mm-hmm. Like, I did love him, but it just wasn't enough, I guess.
Right.
It, whatever it was that we had didn't satisfy like some deeper part of me. Also, I was very young. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was only 21, 22, and I knew he wanted to marry me. Like, I knew that when we were all sitting around with friends one time and somebody joked about him getting me a ring, and I'm like, oh, hell no. Like, don't even joke about that. He got me a promise ring.
Oh.
Which I still have.
What?
Like, a promise. Like, I promise I'm going to marry you.
Oh, girl, get off me. I'm 21.
No, I know.
I got a life to live. I got boys to do.
I'm like, it's pretty early for this shit.
I got money to make. I got chicken fingers to eat.
I got shit to do.
Okay, girl, I'm a bomb-ass bitch.
So we broke up for the summer because I was about to have the summer of sloth, which was so amazing. It's like one of my favorite times of my entire life. And, I wanted to be single for it because I had started flirting with these other guys and they were giving me attention. Again, that's the dark side of like, please stop craving other guys' attention. Okay, Miss W. But anyway, I just wanted to explore it because I also knew that I didn't want to get married, never having at least been on a date with any other person. Like, I just felt like that was not the life for me. Some people can do that. They marry their high school sweetheart. That's the only person they've ever been with and they're happy. Not me. I needed to experience life, more life. So we broke up, and then I, like, hooked up with some other guys. It really is not all that's cracked up to be, FYI, by the way. We ended up getting back together because I was like, oh, I screwed up. Like, he treats me really well. He's hot. He's funny. Like, we do get along. And, like,
he has a big penis.
It's nice.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And so then we got back together. We were together for a year after that. Was what?
Jared was curious.
I was.
I'm sure.
He wanted to know the size.
Okay. Jared did, not you.
No, I didn't want to know. I think it's disgusting.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then that was that. Like, and the same thing. This is why I feel like, and like, hello, listen to myself. Like, if you broke up for a reason the first time, that same issue is probably going to keep cropping up. Like, we made it for almost another year, and it was the same thing over again. I was like, we're not connecting somehow deeply. Plus, I really did have more life to live. I was just starting my radio career, and like, radio is a finicky bitch.
It's another relationship in your life. It's another human being.
It is a huge relationship. So I was like, I knew that I might have to move, and I knew he didn't want to. Like, he's a hometown boy. Like, he wanted to stay in Toledo, and he's done so well for himself. And like, I could have had that life. Like, I'm sure we could have been married and we had had some kids. And if I had like somehow just stuck around the Toledo, Ohio market, and he's a very successful engineer. Damn. Get that money.
Do you regret it?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I do have regrets because I don't like when people say no regrets because what kind of life is that? Like, you're living without incident. You're living without mistake and without, you know, trying things. I think if you're actually living, you're going to have regrets. And that's one of them. It's not like a tearful one. It's just, that's a direction my life could have gone. And it didn't. I regret that. It could have been really beautiful. I'm sure it would have been really nice. And like, but I guess that's just not a life for me. That wasn't my path at that time.
One more question before you start to wrap things up. You said that when you were separated from your college boyfriend and you were sort of hooking up with guys, or you said seeking attention. Have you gotten out of that stage of your life?
No, I'm not sure I'll ever get out of that stage of my life. Like, when do I?
What does that satisfy for you when you get attention from guys?
It must be some kind of validation. And you know what? This is what I think, if I can psychoanalyze myself, this is what I think it is that when you grow up and go all the way through high school as a dork, as being told that you're ugly, as being told that you're not attractive and you're not desirable, and you just feel really bad about yourself and you have that low self-esteem, I think that leaves a permanent scar on you. I do. And I mean, as much as like... You can change if you want to, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we just revert back to these old beliefs where we're not good enough. And so, like, when I get, like, when a guy that I think is cute flirts with me, it just, like, it's like one more drop in a bottomless bucket that says, you are attractive. You are okay. You're enough.
Mm. That's good.
And it sucks. I wish it wasn't that way. Like, and I would like to try to work on that to make it better, but I'm not sure how. Like, I'm a subscriber to Oprah and all of those like self-healing books and like the power of you are enough. Like, mm-hmm. I'm present and I'm enough and I love myself. I do actually love myself. I think I'm mm-hmm. flaws and all because I have a lot of them. And I do, but like somehow it still feels good. Like it's like that little power surge gets juiced up to like full potential when someone else can affirm, yes, you're okay.
I think to me that's part of the human condition. I don't think you'll find one person, even Oprah herself, will say that she doesn't get some sort of validation from something like that, you know, yeah. from someone telling. I mean, she says it herself, like whenever, you know, the biggest stars, presidents come to when she interviews them. And at the end of it, they always say, was that OK?
Did I do OK?
They're looking for validation. I think that you just have to make sure that you find it in the right places.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But see, like, what is the right place?
That's for you to decide.
I know. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. So I guess that's the search. Mm-hmm. That's the search. But it's just that's just one of my private struggles, I guess. That because I know that I'm an intelligent woman. So mm-hmm. like I don't need validation on someone to tell me that I'm intelligent. Mm-hmm. I have those base facts. Like I can solve some issues. I'm a problem solver.
Right.
I'm responsible. Like in most other areas of my life, I don't need the validation. But since that one was like so guttural, it was like so to your core, like what you feel about how you look,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that's why that particular bucket is always it always feels lacking because I can't tell myself that I look pretty. I don't know.
I want that one to sit for a minute.
Yeah.
Because you know it's not true.
Do I?
Do you still not think that?
No.
Why?
I don't know. And now I'm crying. Damn it.
Yes, I got you to cry. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know. I struggle with it every single day.
Every day?
No. I take that back. That's fucking dramatic. That is a soundbite that I... every day. Tearful sob. No. I struggle with it at least once a week. Maybe a couple times a week. And I think that I probably always will. And so it's like one of those demons that you just wrestle with.
Right.
So there it is. That's it. That's why I have the dark side of that validation need. So, yeah. I don't know how any of this pertains to radio, and I feel like I've gone off the fucking charts with this prologue.
Not at all. This is what this is about. It's about getting to who the core of you are. We can't do that in 4 minutes when we talk on the radio from 6 till 10 on the new hot 101.5.
Yeah.
This is you. This is Holly O'Connor. This is the person that I know that when we talk off the air and it's just the two of us, which Jared left the room on the way he went.
This is why it's good that we have somebody to stop us from talking on the air, because we would just do this shit for 4 hours and every person in Tampa Bay would do what Jared did, which is literally walk out the door. How do you think that makes me feel, Jared? You think I feel validated that the other person in our show can't even sit through the entire thing?
Well, no, quite frankly, he didn't have a microphone, so he couldn't ask questions. So.
I know, but like, wouldn't you want to hear?
I know. I think something happened. His phone went off. So
okay, it's fine.
Well, it was good.
It's, again, and see, you know what I did in my head just now?
What?
I was like, it doesn't matter. He doesn't matter. It's fine. I don't need him.
You just wrote it off.
I did. I don't need it. It's whatever. So like, that's just what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feel like somebody doesn't want to whatever with me, then I will try to write you off. The harder it is for me to write you off, the more that I cared in the first place. And there are some people recently and within the past year and within the past month, within the past couple weeks, like the harder it is for me to write it off, the more I realize like that's a little clue to me how much I actually cared about that person or like cared to get to know that person. And then when they like, you know, shut me down and I had to write them off, the harder it is for me to write them off, the more I know I cared about them. I hate the people I can't write off yet. Get out of my life.
They can't. Well, that's what we call the Miguel Show Uncensored, the prologues. And it's all done now. It's all finished. We're done. So
thanks for listening.
Once you get back, we'll go to our regularly scheduled nonsense.
Right.
Who knows what that'll be. Don't forget, you can find the Miguel Show Uncensored at hot1015tampabay.com, on the Hot 101.5 app. And also now you can download the iTunes, and on your little podcast app, you can just type in the Miguel Show Uncensored and it'll pop up there. And thanks to shout out to my old producer from way back in college, Andrew Hodges, who set this up for us.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, he's a web guy and he does all this stuff. And so he set this up for us. So thank you. So any last words, Holly, before you go on your wedding?
No. I'm excited. I'm excited to see everybody, though. So no big things, although I am sorry I didn't get to talk more about like my adventures in radio, because I really would have liked to talk about that, too. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that some other time.
Maybe we'll do a part two. We'll do your radio adventures when you get back.
I know it wasn't that interesting. So if I bored you, I'm sorry.
It wasn't. It was interesting.
Okay. Well, at least there were some parts that I'm sure people found interesting.
I asked questions.
I learned about when you were a hussy.
Yeah. Jared's back, by the way. Jared's wandered back into the room.
All right. What's all your social media, Holly?
Mine is Radio Holly. You can find me on Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, the other stuff.
Pornhub.
Pornhub.radio. What if there is a Radio Holly on Pornhub? Obviously, it's not me.
Oh, XTube. Go to XTube and search for Radio Holly.
I don't even want to know what's there. Don't do it.
Producer Jared, what's all your social media?
Nurse Jared on Twitter and Instagram, and then it is Producer Jared on Snapchat.
All right. Mine is Miguel Fuller on everything. We will see you not next week, but the week after that for the Miguel Show Uncensored.